It's time for yet another episode of Homegrown, a show about local art. I am here with your host that puts the spark in your soul, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton. How are you?
Good morning, and I'm the guy who's out of control, Clinton Johnston. How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm okay. It's a 2 cup of coffee morning. It's a 2 cup of coffee morning. So, you know, I should be okay. You shouldn't irritate me too much.
Is there ever a morning when I shouldn't irritate you too much? Because that's not like I don't see that morning on my calendar. When I wake up, I don't think there's really ever a morning when I'm looking saying, oh, this is the morning where it's good to irritate Leslie too much. That sounds like a survival strategy for me.
Well, it's kind of a crapshoot, isn't it? You know, I'm just saying you might want to watch what you say. That's all.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Speaking of watching what we say.
We are speaking of that? Okay.
Yes.
We're gonna go with that.
You
okay.
Just
cool.
did. You just okay. did. Speaking of watching what we say, the show starts with a parental advisory. At one point in the show, any point in the show, we may say the word rampant. Rampant. So, yes, that could happen. So, if you are a parental and you're being experimental, if you're kind of trying to get those kids in the shelter from the world's helter-skelter, then you might want to keep them away because you might not want them to hear such words as rampant. You've been advised.
Wow, that's an interesting word. You choose an interesting word this week.
I don't choose the words.
You don't?
The words are there.
The words are
the
just
words,
there?
The words are just there.
They just come to you like a muse, like lightning striking you
like,
at some point?
Like an evil robber in the night.
There we go. That's it.
That could poison our national resolve. Words that we must be wary of.
Wow, there must be a lot of those.
There's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many, but we're here to advise people about
and we're going to go through we're going to go through all of them.
All of them.
All right.
All of them.
The words.
Or else the terrorists will win.
That's right. We're going to go through all the words.
All the words. Excellent. Okay. Enough of that silliness. Let's go to our first guest. We are here actually, I should let you introduce it, but I've got your name. So with Deborah McLeod. Hello, Deborah.
Hello, Clinton.
And tell us who you're from, Deborah.
I'm from Chroma Projects Art Laboratory.
Can I say that is the coolest name for a gallery? That I love that. Chroma Projects Art Laboratory. I love the image of like Erlenmeyer flasks and little things bubbly.
Yeah, that's what we do in a nutshell. In a conceptual nutshell.
Great. So tell us about Chroma Projects. So how did you come up with that? So there's got to be a story behind that title. How did you come up with that name, Chroma Projects Art Laboratory?
Well, I started with Chroma. And I wanted to make sure, or at least try to have a name that somebody wouldn't claim was theirs.
Fair enough.
But I like the idea of projects.
Obviously, when we named this Homegrown, we weren't concerned with that at all.
Yeah. I like the idea of projects. I used to work for the McLean Project for the Arts in McLean, Virginia, and I thought that was a good name because it's very active. Projects are things that you undertake, and it's also project. So it's kind of got a double meaning depending on how you pronounce it.
Oh yeah. There you go.
And art laboratory. I don't know. I just like the idea of experimenting. That's what I would like to bring in artists from elsewhere as well as mix it up with people here in town, artists here in town. So the laboratory aspect and it, you know, involves that as well as the kind of experimenting that the artists that I like to present choose to do with their work.
Cool. So is there a particular type of experimenting? Are they experimenting in terms of subject matter? Are they experimenting in terms of technique, in terms of media, or is it a combination?
Yeah, it's all of those. I like to bring in people who are doing different things with materials, but also thinking in different ways, presenting ideas in a sort of different light.
So give us an example of what a typical Chroma project looks like.
Okay, well, I will pick, it's not exactly typical, but it's one that was pretty great, and it's one that's kind of a paradigm for what I like to do, and that was I had Elsa B. Dixon come in, and she raises silkworms. She grew up in South Africa, and she raises silkworms. And
wait, she raises silkworms?
She raises them, yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. So she brings the silkworms in. You can only do this in September because silkworms, the later part of the summer, because silkworms like mulberry leaves at a certain point in time. So that's when they start to go through their whole process of eating the silkworm leaves and then turning into pupa, and then they emerge eventually. They become little white moths that no longer fly because they've been raised in captivity for so many years. So they, but then they spin with silk. And so Elsebe has developed this process of having them spin within matrices that she creates, sculptural matrices. So, and she does.
What?
Mm-hmm.
She, say that again. She's developed a process to have silkworms spin within certain matrices,
yes,
that she creates?
Yes, her, sculpturally.
How do you do that?
Well, she knows what they do and what they like to do, what their inclinations are. And so she creates these forms that they are attracted to spinning in. When they do that, they spin in the forms instead of spinning the cocoon. But it's all right because the little pupas are all right without the cocoon. The cocoon is a protective measure. Nobody in the gallery is going to eat one. So... So
I don't know if you ran out of the crudité during one of the
hey, ew.
Yeah, we didn't have anybody do that.
Thank goodness.
So, anyway, then after they've spun these beautiful golden, well, some are white and some are golden, depends on where the silkworms come from. But these beautiful gossamer platforms, sort of, she often has them suspended on like monofilament or something, so they're mobile. And so then when they come out of the cocoon and they are little moths, they're flapping their wings in order to get the attention of the girl,
yes,
moth. And so so this makes the pieces spin around. So the moths are this is the kind
wow,
of
thing. Wow, that is so cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh my God.
It's great. It's the kind of thing that I really love. It's hard to find that kind of out there thinking,
well,
but
I imagine so.
Yeah.
I think that really puts the pin in experimentation.
Yeah.
It must be fun to hang out with her. Like, so what are you working? Oh, I was thinking of mixing some media, maybe some glass with my paint. I like to live dangerously. What are you working in? Silkworms.
Yeah. Oh, where do you get those?
I'm sorry, what? Worms? Worms. Alrighty.
So, yeah. So farther down in my calendar, I'm going to be doing a show about bees. And so,
tell me you're not going to have actual bees in the gallery.
We won't have actual bees, but we will have an artist that works with wax and an artist that works with honey. And so there'll be, you know, some of the, and then some people who who paint bees, pictures of bees. And then also somebody who does something with computerized images of bees, you know, like doing some kind of fragmenting graphics.
Oh, I was kind of looking forward to having like bees and going to see like a live hive, you know.
Well, maybe I will. I don't have anybody found yet that works with bees, living bees. But I mean, I'm open to it. That's the kind of thing I love. And we're going to do a lot of educational stuff about bees, you know, how to raise bees and care for bees and be mindful of what bees do for our, you know, agricultural.
Yeah, they are huge part, yeah, of our ecological system.
They are.
And honey has a lot of regenerative, mm-hmm, properties.
It
so
does.
Especially if you raise your own bees and get your own honey, it's a lot better for you than honey you would buy
That's
in a
right.
store.
That's right.
We can do that all synthetically. Dow Chemical is going to replace all of that pretty soon.
Oh my God. No, I have a couple of friends who raise bees, and they sell their honey at small farmers markets and stuff. So
maybe they'd like to think about doing something educational.
I will
show.
Definitely let them know. Mm-hmm. They're not in town. They're in the DC area you wouldn't think people in DC would be raising bees, but that's
great.
Part of what is starting to happen in, yeah. in cities like that. People yeah. are
on rooftops.
On rooftops, exactly. Mm-hmm. So he's my one friend, he's got a huge hive of like three different kinds of bees. He did all this research and got like three different very exotic bees because he wanted the honey to taste a certain mm-hmm. way. He got really into it. But yeah, I will definitely mention it to him. That'd yeah. be great.
We stayed at the Waldorf Astoria a few weeks ago, and I looked down from my window and I could see that they had bee hives and a garden for the bees.
Oh, whoa.
In the hotel. Yeah.
Wow.
I know.
See, that's... it's so cynical, or at least problematic me. I would think that, especially the Waldorf Astoria, especially an organization like the Waldorf Astoria, I imagine that somebody there said, well, what happens if we run into somebody who's allergic to bees and they get stung by one of our bees? Lawsuit, we can't do something like this.
Well, you can't go out there. It's just for the staff. You can just see it. You can't go out.
That's good.
Because I wanted to, and they said, well... Yeah.
So you said you were in McLean. Was there something? Because it seems like to deal with this level of experimentation, to look for people who are kind of. I mean, I should back up and say I suppose many artists, not all, but many artists like to think about, okay, what's the next step? Or, you know, where are the boundaries of the box so I can step out of it?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do that's new? What can I do that pushes me? What can I do that pushes my audience? But to go to this level, it seems like, was there an event? Was there some point where you just said, no, this is, I'm doing this and I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do something like this.
Well, when I was at McLean, you know, I've been in community art centers most of my life as a curator. So I've always, you know, had fun.
Explain to our listeners, if they don't know, what is a community art center?
A community art center is one that is very based on fulfilling the expectations of the community, doing a lot of, you know, kids programming, which is fine. I mean, it's wonderful. But you can't be as out there. I mean, I have got in trouble a few times for going too far without...
did somebody use rampant in a piece? Were your
I'm
artists...
I'm sure they did. It's such a good word.
Going rampant? Was that what...
yeah.
No, you know what? I applaud the fact that you got in trouble because, you know, I mean, that's what it takes to move stuff forward. That's what it takes to get juices flowing and to get people, you know, excited. I agree.
Shall I keep telling you stories? Or
Yeah. Tell us another story. Yeah.
So, well, I did a show called Paper City when I was at one of the art centers. Well, I was at the Peninsula Fine Arts Center in Newport News. And I wanted to talk about white flight, and I wanted to talk about how the disintegration of the city and how the supremacy of the automobile was destroying the city because everybody was, like, just moving away from it and abandoning it. So I, the Peninsula Fine Arts Center, this beautiful circle that you drove around, and so I unauthorized. I had somebody bring in a white Volvo and flip it upside down super gently, but it was a car that was already we call it totaled, but you couldn't tell that to look at it. So anyway, so I had this white Volvo upside down in the center of the Peninsula Fine Arts Center. To upturn the idea of its power over us.
Well, that's for Charlottesville. That would be a very disturbing metaphor.
Yeah. But it was interesting because the guild, who had really started the Peninsula Fine Arts Center, they were very distressed about this upside down car. And it was in the springtime, so it was Garden Week was involved during the month. And they were very upset and wanted it taken down. And I wouldn't do it because it was a really critical part of the show. And so I had a garden center come in and planted stuff all around it.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, that was not very well received. I just... that kind of thing.
All right, so it's 15 minutes past the hour, 94.7 WPVC. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art, and we are here with our guest, Deborah McLeod, the director of Chroma Projects Art Laboratory. Deborah, you've got a show coming up.
Yes, we do. It's called Elephants Under Wings. And this show, it features Aggie Zed, Khaki Dimmock, and Robin Lee. And it's a partly a fundraiser for the World Wildlife Fund for elephant protection because of the ivory poaching that goes on. And if you look it up, it turns out that ivory poaching is one of the leading fundraising efforts that for the funding the terrorist organizations.
Yes.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Like you knew that?
I actually did know that. But yeah, because yes. I mean, how they're doing illegal activity. How can they get, you know, that's how they get money, by doing illegal activity.
Right. Millions of dollars.
You're saying the terrorists don't open bake sales? It's not.
Probably not. Yeah.
Okay.
But that's.
So I can go back to the bake sales.
Yes, you can.
Because they were. Because the news was telling me that I shouldn't go fake bake sales.
Really. Okay.
It was. I'm not going to say the station.
Okay. Oh my. That's a great way to raise money and an awesome cause.
Yeah, it is. And the work is really wonderful. Aggie Zed is very imaginative. She makes these beautiful little tiny porcelain elephants, but then. And those are, you can buy a little porcelain elephant on its own, but she also takes copper wire and scraps of copper particularly, and she builds them little floats, and she adds wings to them, and they're just gorgeous little sculptures. And then Khaki Dimmick does these really precious, almost childlike drawings of elephants, and they're intertwined with each other, and they're very sweet. And then Robin Lee has been to Africa and photographs elephants in their natural habitat.
Oh, wow.
Which they say within 11 years, if something isn't done to stop this poaching, the elephants in the wild are going to be almost extinct. So.
Yes. Yeah. And they're such sweet animals. I mean, they have just sweet dispositions. They are not aggressive in any, unless they're threatened.
Right.
They are not aggressive by nature.
Right. Or they have a very long memory, and they have gone after people who've harmed them. But they also, I don't know if you heard the story about this man who had done a lot of elephant refuge kind of thing in Africa. And he had protected a number of elephants that he had saved from poachers and brought to his refuge. Well, he died, and a few days after his death in Africa, they looked up and they saw all of these elephants, single file, coming down the road to honor him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they stayed 2 days, and then they left, all of them. And they were all from different places in Africa.
Yeah, I mean,
consciousness.
You can't tell me that they don't talk to each other, that they don't know what's going on. And I don't understand anyone who doesn't understand that and who wouldn't want to protect that. That's a, you know, it's amazing.
It is amazing. Come on.
Money. Money. The things. Oh, come on. The things people do for money. I mean, come on.
And that's very, very sad. And that's awesome that we're using art to help combat that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And the World Wildlife Fund does a lot to try to provide people in those countries with other means of income. You know, teaching them farming techniques, and also doing a lot with the law to help, you know, the legal system to be a little bit more capable or whatever.
So these three artists, they are Virginia artists, aren't they?
Yes.
But they're not local artists.
Well, no, they all actually are local.
Oh, okay.
So Aggie lives in Louisa, and Robin Lee lives here in Charlottesville, and so does Khaki. Khaki's the head or director, I think executive director, but I'm not sure of her title for the homeless shelter.
Haven.
Haven.
Yeah.
The Haven.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Cool. All right. Then there goes my effective research. but that's okay. So. I'm noticing a theme in in a lot of the stories that you're telling, that not only is there inventiveness in terms of the art, but there also seems to be a dedication to some sort of educative property. Is that am I identifying that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
And is that an important thing for you?
Oh, definitely. I think, you know, we have this limited time on Earth, and I feel like we have a big job and a hard job. As you do, you know, with a progressive radio station to help people to think about things in depth and be, you know, act with conscience and, yeah.
Indeed, indeed. So, so difficult. And we should so value the progressive radio stations that are out there, such as the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville, 94.7. I had to.
That was awesome. That was a beautiful segue, and she set it up so wonderfully. That's
she
great.
Just lobbed it up there. What do you want me to do?
Well, yeah. You're lobbing it to me. I'm lobbing it back.
Excellent. See, it's the back and forth. That's what people tune in for on the show. So this is I'm really impressed with the scope of this project. Is it like bringing these artists together, and it's a sort of a cooperative show, right? Because they all bring their different aspects, but there's a common theme.
Mm-hmm.
And then bringing in the World Wildlife Fund, was this something that somebody came to you with? Is this something like the World Wildlife Fund, or just something that you conceived? I mean, how does something like this generate?
I just cooked it up, and I have a long bath every morning, and just wait for stuff to come into my head. And it always does. There's something about soaking in hot water.
I love it, because I do the same thing. I do the same thing as a writer when I'm stuck.
You need to get her bath salts, because that's, you know, right? Like, that's a very useful bath she's taking.
Well, I mean, you know, you kind of want to decompress, and you just kind of sit in some hot water and just soak in the silence, and things just come to you.
I guess it pours out of the water, coming out of the
yes,
spigot.
Yes,
coming,
water
coming
is an
to
amazing
me from everywhere.
Muse.
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent. So it's 22 minutes past the hour, sitting here on 94.7 WPBC, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. You're listening to Homegrown, a show about local art, and we're here with our guest, Deborah McLeod, the director of Chroma Projects Art Laboratory. I don't think the laugh is part of it.
It's fine.
Okay. Thank you. So I was experimenting.
You were. That's what we do.
Going outside. great. So, tell them, and we've got our Facebook page up right now. If anybody would like to send us a message, we will add a question for Deborah or for any of our guests. We will read that question on the air,
or a question for us. We like questions too.
Leslie likes questions. I don't like questions.
Oh my God, he's such an old curmudgeon.
I'm a middle-aged curmudgeon.
Oh, that makes a big difference.
Wait till you get here, kid. You got to grab on to every single moment you got. Please, could you tell our listeners about when the show is, where the show is, how they can see it?
Yes, it opens with First Friday on December 4th. The artist reception is from 5 to 7.
And will all three artists be there?
Well, Robin and Aggie will be, but Khaki's in Costa Rica.
Oh, she's in Costa Rica.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And the show is at Chroma's new location. Back, we were on the downtown mall for 4.5 years, and then I lost that lease, so I took it home. But now we're back in town. We're on Water Street at 214 West Water Street, which is right across from S Cafe.
Ooh. Congratulations on your new place.
Thank you. Glad to be back in town.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us about this. It was really great to hear, and I can't wait to go see the show.
Good. I hope you'll be there.
December 4th, First Fridays, one of the many, many things popping up. Elephants Under Wings at the Chroma Projects Art Laboratory. Deborah McLeod, director. Absolutely fabulous. Great. Hey, Leslie.
Yes?
Let's bring that beat back and tell people what else is going on in this fine, fine, fine artistic town of ours. Boom. Live Arts is... Live Arts is still looking for black actors. Is that correct? That's correct, right?
That's correct.
Live Arts is still looking for black actors for To Kill a Mockingbird. So if you want to play a minister, whom I'm told is strong, or an accused rapist, who I'm also told is strong, or that accused rapist's suffering wife, whom also strong, or a maid double strong, then head on over to Live Arts. Show them your acting talents. They need people to put on yet another wonderful show about white people fighting racism.
currently at 4 County Players. What? That's what it is. This is what. Come on. Come on.
It's. I would like to say that it's much more about opening up the dialogue of race relations.
Oh my God, what's the matter with you this morning? You are so weird today.
currently playing at 4 County Players until December 13th is Honk, the musical, the show about the ugly duckling. Yes, it sounds like it's a kid's show. It is a show that you can take kids to, but it isn't necessarily just a kid's show. Give it a try. We usually don't try to throw our opinions in, but we saw it. We had a delightful time.
Awesome!
We have a delightful time, of course, at everything we go see. Today at 11 a.m., right after our show ends, you could be listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, or... if not, then you can skip over to the writer's house for their Inside the Writer's Studio. Writers talking about writing. Today, Dahlia Lithwick and Courtney Stewart. Check out also the Writer House website for their December and January classes. They look fascinating. Coming up on December 3rd, speaking of classes, creative filmmaking and open studio workshop for students at Lighthouse Studio. I think you need either prior filmmaking or past experience in one of their workshops to attend, but check out their website for details and for the workshop fee. If you want your students, your young people to learn something about, or if you are young people and listening to this, then watch out, you might be going rampant. Learn about filmmaking. The Lighthouse Studio, December 3rd and 5th, speaking of films, but not really films, The Rocky Horror Show at PBCC. That's right. It's going to be just a jump to the left.
And then a step to the right.
Indeed. So head on down from December 3rd to December 5th. You just got one weekend to go up to the lab and see what's on the slab. All right. December 3rd and 5th also is the fall dance concert at UVA. December 4th, as we've said, First Fridays. Brought to you through the Piedmont Council of the Arts. Downtown galleries open their doors and allow you to see wonderful exhibits, many of them opening and new for the first time. Often you have chances to talk to the artists. And don't forget, Elephants Under Wings at the Chroma Projects Art Laboratory, as we've just heard. The next day, December 5th, Christmas with the Consort at the Virginia Consort. Get your old dead white guy music on with the First Presbyterian Church on Park Street. Get your tickets for this if you haven't, if you're at all interested, because this thing sells out consistently. Consistently. It is the gig for the Christmas season. December 6th and 7th, Moon Over Buffalo auditions at 4 County Players. Moon Over Buffalo is a madcap comedy, and they need 4 adult men and 4 adult women. Head over to 4 County Players website for details. Contact them for more information. Coming up December 8th, Uncovered. Uncovered Charlottesville, our favorite singer-songwriter open mic night, hosted by our man Brady Earnhardt. He was on the show talking about it. It's coming up again monthly. Next time, December 8th, at S Cafe. December 11th, Let There Be Light at PVCC. I'm looking forward to this. I missed this last year, and I don't want to miss this year. An exhibit with different artists dealing with light. It sounds fascinating. It sounds really interesting. December 19th to 20th, The Nutcracker at PVCC with the Charlottesville Ballet. And to give just a brief look at some of the music stuff going on. Today, Jason Fry at Wild Wolf Brewery at 2 p.m. December 2nd, The Smooth Piano of Bob Williamson at Fellini's. December 4th, Love Cannon at the Jefferson Theater. Get your 80s music done through a bluegrass, yes, 80s music done through a bluegrass lens on. December 5th, it's the 3Ds. Alex Davis, Kevin Donlevy, and Tom Dawson at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. And December 12th, local singer-songwriter Jason Cooper, after a long, long absence from our local stages, comes back in force at Seaville Coffee. And of course, every Wednesday, you got the tough choice between Jim Wave at the Blue Moon Diner and Mike Rosinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. But every Thursday, it's John Dearth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And that's just some of what's going on in this wonderful artistic town of ours. Yeah. How are we doing, Leslie?
Well, I'm doing quite well, Clinton. You're a little weird today. I'm just going to say it.
You're the one who's only got two cups of coffee. 31 minutes past the hour on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. All right, well, I think it's time.
You think?
Oh, my goodness.
Gotcha.
Oh, my gracious. You just came back at me.
I know.
They're just out of nowhere.
I know.
I don't even know if we need to do the moment of conflict. You are the moment of conflict.
Because that was it right there.
Like, slap me down.
Hey.
Gosh.
Hey, I spent Thanksgiving with 8 of my family members. All in my house. For 2 days.
That is so not my fault.
The level of sarcasm that I had to hold in, it's got to come out somewhere.
Great. 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 So I'm the recipient of that, and you didn't even bring me a slice of pumpkin pie to ameliorate the situation.
Pumpkin pie? Ew.
Wait, what?
Sweet potato.
Wait, no. Tell me you didn't just ew pumpkin pie.
I did.
Tell me you didn't just ew pumpkin
pie. I actually did. Pumpkin pie is gross.
There is...
Sweet potato, however, is the most wonderful pie on the face of a planet, second only to apple pie.
Okay, there is no planet in this solar system or in this local galactic structure where... pumpkin pie is gross. It just doesn't exist. You can go to NASA. They will tell you.
Well, obviously, you are living in your own little world. Take off those pumpkin-colored glasses, my dear. No.
Hubble Space Telescope, looking up. Oh, what is that? Is that a planet transiting across that star? What's the spectrum? Oh, looks like it's pumpkin pie, and it's great. There you go.
Okay, I think we need to move right along to our next guest. She is sitting here, like, the look on her face right now. Keisha will agree with me that you're crazy today, right?
People up high.
All right, so we have with us Miss Keisha Jarrett from Live Arts.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, wait, someone Thank from Live so Arts is here?
Oh,
Clinton.
Did I walk into something? Like, I said I would come and do this.
Right, and now he's being weird. Like, I don't know. I'm so sorry, Keisha. I'm so, so sorry. I apologize profusely for the weirdness of my co-host. Keisha, what are you here to tell us about? I'm excited.
Well, Live Arts is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year, and our big...
Woo! 25 years.
I know.
Word.
We are no longer a kid. We can rent a car.
awesome!
And our winter musical this year is City of Angels, and it is probably the best musical that you've never heard of. And the reason why I say that is the musical came out in 1990, which incidentally is also the birth of Live Arts in 1990.
Yes.
It won 6 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, and then it also won for Best
City
Revival.
City of Angels won 6?
6 Tony Awards. And not only that, the people that actually made the musical itself, you absolutely know who they are. Cy Coleman, who did the music, also did Sweet Charity and I Love My Wife.
Yeah, Sweet Charity. I love that.
I know. Not only that, but songs like If My Friends Could See Me Now, did not start on a Carnival Cruise Line with Kathy Lee Gifford.
Thank goodness.
Mm. Witchcraft, The Best Is Yet to Come, and Big Spender. Everybody knows those songs.
Yes.
He wrote the songs that are in this musical. He wrote the music, yes. He actually was a child musical prodigy, giving recitals at Carnegie Hall at 6, if you can believe that. He was inducted into the Jazz Musical Hall of Fame. And that was all before he started his Broadway career.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Talented guy.
Cy Coleman is he's no joke.
He's no joke.
And he's still alive? That's the thing.
No.
See? See? Clinton has this thing. He can't.
No, don't.
Really
just don't.
Go.
Just don't.
What?
Like, can't you?
You thought Bill Withers was dead.
Be on my side. Can't you just be on my side?
I'm on your side. I'm
for
just
once. Talk about the lyricist.
The lyricist is David Zippel. Both Cy and David. Oh. He moved it closer to my face. Both Cy and David have worked together closely. They worked together closely for years. The person that wrote the book, though, is really the most important. Well, not the most important, but probably the person that, again, you're going to know of, which is Larry Gelbart. Larry Gelbart wrote MASH and directed, I think, like the first through the fourth seasons. He wrote A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Tootsie, starring Pancho Villa as himself. So it's a pretty exciting and fun and extremely inventive script.
So how is it, although this gets a lot of play, mm-hmm. In the regional theater and community theater circuit, mm-hmm. people like to do this show, and I see versions of the show being done. How is it that we don't know about this show?
Well, it's a super technically hard show to do. And I think that that's actually why. I mean, you know the music from it, What You Don't Know About Women, You're Nothing Without Me, all of those songs you may know. But in the world of the play that itself and reading the script itself, it actually reads like a movie script. So if you're making...
Which, not surprising coming from Larry Gelbart.
Correct. Exactly. But when you read things like Iris Out, how do you do that on a stage? So it becomes...
Mr. Gelbart, I don't mean to step in,
but
you've got... I notice here you say Iris Out. Go with it. Just go with it.
You know, having large cranes on stage at the end.
I'm sorry. You said Iris Out, and all I could see in my head was the iris from Stargate. I don't know why, but...
That too...
Awesome.
Maybe Lord of the Rings. We can have that. We can do that. Abnormally large contact. So within the world of the play,
I like her. I like her a lot.
You are wrong. Suddenly I had this image of Sauron's eye looking obliquely, and then suddenly, ow. Oh, wait. I think I've got something in here.
Could there's you, an eyelash. There's an eyelash. Somebody pull that out.
Somebody pull that.
I just need some Visine. It's fine. Just need a big thing of Visine. But the world of the play itself, it's highly complicated to try to wrap your mind around staging. So in the Technicolor world, you've got a novelist, Stein, who...
So you have to explain that to people.
Yes.
Two different worlds in the play.
I'm getting there.
Okay.
Leave her alone.
You have the novelist Stein, who gets to pen the Hollywood screenplay for his novel City of Angels. As that sort of storyline plays out with his schmarmy producer, his wife.
Every producer is schmarmy.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's pre-written.
Right.
Then you have his actual typed world of the film noir world of the private detective. And that's all played in black and white. So at any given point on the stage, you can have an entire world of color that then morphs into a black and white world that you see.
Oh, wow. Yeah. How do you do that on stage?
How do you do that?
Whoa.
It's a lot of imaginative staging that's by the director Matt Jocelyn. We have an amazing lighting designer in Robert Benjamin, who works at the Paramount Theater.
And I'm sure there's a lot of costumes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because if you're doing an entire world that's black and white, they can't wear anything but black and white, huh?
Well,
a lot of gray.
A lot of it is is the color morphing depending on what the gel of the light looks like. So you can do something that's a color, but then just depending upon
and
that.
And mute it with the light. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So for all you chemists out there.
For all you chemists or who artists. who may want a job in the art world, develop a fabric that changes depending on the light that is shown on it.
See?
Do that.
There you go. Not hypercolor.
No. Not hypercolor, but changes depending on the temperature of the light that's shown at. That would be awesome, right? Oh my God.
Merging two worlds. The show also reunites the team of Matt Jocelyn, who directs the show, and the musical direction by Kristen Baltus, who worked together on The Producers and last winter's incredibly, incredibly fun and successful Les Miserables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, Keisha, for those who don't know, I can't imagine there's anybody who doesn't, but for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about Live Arts.
So Live Arts, like I said, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary. It is a completely volunteer based theater. We've got a small staff of 10. So there's 6 full-time, 4 part-time individuals that are on staff. And everything else is run on the hands, backs, and power of our volunteer force. So anybody that comes in, that's a director, props designer, lighting designer, costume designer, stage management, all of those people are how we actually are able to produce these shows.
Right.
And you know, and speaking as a convert, like I was one of those people. I was in a chorus line 3 years ago and then never left the building. And that's sort of what happens. It feeds this feeling of family and community. And you start to get to know all of these people by working on these shows. And it fosters that love. And if you want to try something, it's an open place for you to be able to do it.
I think that's what community theater is as a whole.
Yeah.
You know, it's run by the people who want to create something.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's great. Clinton has a question, apparently. He's poking me.
It's okay, now, well, then forget it. No.
Ooh, he's uppity. Okay, my weekly rant is going to be awesome then, because he's already like pissed at me. It's going to be great. Great radio. So, Keisha, what are you doing on City of Angels? What's your title? What's your particular lane that you're running in?
Well, I am actually here just as the marketing director of Live Arts. I did work on some of the development ideas of City of Angels before we started rehearsals. But it's pretty much just...
Really? Because I was told...
Oh, goodness.
Because I was told
oh, goodness.
That you were the assistant director.
Well, yes, I was at a certain point in time.
Wait. How does that happen? Did you get demoted?
Demoted,
did you
yes.
get kicked out?
No.
What does that mean?
I think that anybody that... does things in an artistic sort of setting and also has a pretty overwhelming job can attest to not having enough hours in the day. And so that's essentially what happened. I didn't have enough hours or minutes to do things, such as, you know, use the restroom or or things like that. So
Don't you have volunteers who can do that for you?
Oh, not if it's me. I have to actually like do things too. plus for myself, I'm a writer, so I wanted to have some time to actually devote to that as well.
So but you like musicals, right?
I do like musicals. I like my sort of passion projects tend to be the smaller, grittier, really black comedy shows, not necessarily in musicals, but I do like them. They make me feel extremely lighthearted. And I mean, one musical that I recently saw, I saw Hamilton, and that just totally like...
How was that?
It was amazing. And it's and I know that everybody is sort of saying that. Oddly enough, I was waiting in the lottery line and I used to live in New York, and I happened to see someone that it was my friend's boyfriend, and there was one person that got into the lottery line that only got one ticket, so I got their other one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So let me throw this general musical question at you, which is, and thinking about, you know, this show, I mean, this show is unique in terms of modern musicals in that, say what you want to about it, it's an original show.
Yes.
Right. As much as it sounds like Gelbert was waiting for it to shift into the world of movies.
Right.
It was written to be a musical.
Yes.
From the ground up. And, you know, certainly having musicals that come from books, that come from various sources, nothing new. That's been happening throughout the history of American musical theater. But I think we're seeing something like this less and less. And I'm wondering what you think, because here's my thought. I'm wondering if the times when we had like standard, reliable producers of musicals, artistic producers of musicals, teams like Candor and Ebb, mm-hmm. Like Rodgers and Hammerstein, or even people like Stephen Sondheim, I'm wondering if that time, just because of the economics of things, is gone. Like that Broadway musicals have taken a shift, that we're not going to see stuff like that anymore.
You know, to be quite honest, I would have completely agreed with you had it been right before I just saw Hamilton. It is.
Do you think it's the game changer?
Not to
use an overused phrase,
I know,
but
but it's still it's the thing about it. And right after I saw it, I just kept talking about it, and then I bought the soundtrack and have been listening to it incessantly. But the thing about it is that it is a musical that is written and performed by people that look like me, that sounds like me, that's in an urban setting as far as like what the actual music and how it's written. It tells a story. If I had had something like this when I was in middle school and high school, I would be way smarter than I am now. because it's just, it all lives in your brain. It stays there. And
I hear that months, not even months after it opened, there were kids who had memorized and we're presenting the initial
absolutely
song, you know, in classes.
Yeah, I mean it's incredible, and I think that if you look at something like that, now I do think that those voices are few and far between, but I think it exists. It does. It exists that somebody can do that.
So that's the same reaction I had when I saw Ain't Misbehavin' for the first time, because
mm-hmm.
I saw Ain't Misbehavin' when I was 12 at Ford's Theater with the original Broadway cast. And
I'm jealous.
And from that moment on, I was captivated. I was like, this is amazing. There are all these brown people on stage.
Yeah.
And they're singing, and it's music that like resonates with me. And even at 12, I was like, that's so great. I want more of that. And
yeah.
You know, and it got to the point where my mom got so tired of listening to the soundtrack that I absolutely made her buy, that she was like, okay, I'm not going to get mad about this anymore, and just started singing along with me. And to this day, every once in a while, we'll put the soundtrack in and just sing the whole musical together.
And it's also kind of amazing. That's again, the thing about music is that it doesn't matter when it is that you start. It could have been 20 years ago that you heard a song, but if it resonated and it lived within you, like, you'll just pull it out and just start and know every single word, every pause.
Yeah, well, see, here's the thing about what you're talking about with Hamilton, though. People were saying some of the same things about Rent when mm-hmm. it came out. People were saying, "Oh, Rent, this is so fresh. This is so open culturally. It is bringing in musical influences into Broadway that have needed to be brought in for a while. This is the thing that's going to revitalize the American musical." And of course, John Larson, who wrote it, was not with us to give more, and it just, like, any movement, or it feels like any movement or momentum or anything that Rent could have started kind of stopped right there. And I wonder,
sort of,
I wonder if there is the atmosphere, these the economic atmosphere in Broadway to let not to just let artists come up, but even when they come up, like we've got with Hamilton mm-hmm. here, but to let it continue, because there are all these really talented people who are making musicals. Or who have made musicals, but you know, where are they? like the people who are making consistent musicals, it was the Disney Corporation.
Right. I think they we're probably talking about two different things, right. Two different train tracks now. Is that like there's one thing if we're talking about like Rent and what it meant and how it was influential, that you look at a musical like Passing Strange or Next to Normal. Neither one of those would have existed without Rent. Like it just wouldn't have happened.
Right.
But if you look at it in terms of what is on Broadway, absolutely. Like that's the difference to me. And so there's a number of things that can be done that are off Broadway or off Broadway or like on a smaller like regional level that do have that feeling to them and aren't the Little Mermaid or the Lion King.
Well, and it's also going to trickle up. I mean, the more we do stuff that's new and exciting and quote unquote avant-garde, you know, that pushes musicals in a different way or introduces
Absolutely.
Something, the more we do that regionally, it's going to make its way to Broadway.
Well, Hamilton started at the Public Theater.
Right.
So, you know, right. it's that sort of thing, but I understand what you're saying. I get that.
51 minutes past the hour. You're here listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We are here with our guest, Keisha Jarrett, the marketing and communications manager from Live Arts, and also at one time the assistant director of their upcoming production of City of Angels. Stay tuned after this, of course. It's the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your man, Rick Moore. Today, his guest is Harriet Corr, the executive director of the Charlottesville International Rescue Committee. I believe they are going to talk about the refugee crises. But before that, you're still in our loving, loving hands. Keisha, tell them about City of Angels. When can they see it? Where can they see it? How can they get to there?
Yes. City of Angels opens up this Friday, December 4th.
Friday.
And runs through January 10th. You can get tickets either by visiting the box office. Our theater is located on Water Street, downtown Charlottesville. And I would assume that many of you know our box office manager, Daryl Smith, who seems to be the mayor, unofficial mayor of Charlottesville.
Of course.
Or by visiting our website, which is www.livearts.org. And then the rest of the season that we've got The Other Place that's actually directed by Betsy Tucker, To Kill a Mockingbird, which we mentioned earlier, directed by one of the founders of Live Arts, Fran Smith. Hunter Gatherers, which is a delightful and super weird black comedy directed by Brie Luck. And then we round out our season with Dream Girls, and that's directed by artistic director Julie Hamburg and associate directed and choreographed by Ike Anderson.
Awesome. Live Arts Theater in Charlottesville. Keisha, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
It's 54 minutes past the hour. Before we head over to Rick Moore in the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, we're going to take a moment that I'm looking forward to. It's that point of the show where we do Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Yeah, that didn't sound convincing at all. You are not looking forward to this at all. I can tell in your voice, but it's okay. It is all going to be okay. So, as artists, it is really hard to go see art, right? Because we're in the middle of creating it. We are the ones that are sitting there waiting for the muse to get us. And so it's hard to pull ourselves away from that and actually go out and support other artists, even if they are our friends, our close friends. And everyone who does theater or live music or, you know, photography, whatever it is, we all know that you never get to see any art because you're too busy doing it. And then, of course, we all have a 9-to-5, right? Because, you know, this is Charlottesville. Nobody's, you know, paying all their bills with this. So we all have a 9-to-5, and then some of us are married and some of us have kids, and there are all these things that we have to do. And before you know it, your calendar becomes so full that you have no time to re-energize yourself. Well, over the Thanksgiving holiday, I had a wonderful opportunity. My calendar cleared spectacularly without me doing anything. It cleared on a lovely Friday night for me to go see Bent at the Bridge. And the reason I wanted to go was because a dear friend of mine who no longer lives in Charlottesville, he's moved on to the big city, bright lights and all that, was back in town and he was doing a comedy show. Okay, he was doing some stand-up comedy in the middle of the Bent improv show. And I got to go. And it was awesome. Not just awesome to see him perform again, which I hadn't been able to see him perform in like 5 years, and I had really missed his energy and performing with him. But it was also awesome just to kind of sit there and let someone else create something for me. It was transformative in that I was able to stop thinking so much and simply enjoy it. And because improv is interactive and the audience is brought into what's being created, it both let me relax because I wasn't responsible for anything really that was going on, but I felt like I was connected to it in a way that a regular stage play or musical concert doesn't give you. So I went home after that. I'd been working on a piece for like 4 months, and I couldn't get over the hump, you know? I'm sitting there, and I know I have to do it, and I just can't make myself fit. Friday night, I stayed up until 3 a.m., and I finished it. And I realized that I finished it because I had been rejuvenated. That, going to that show, seeing that friend, feeling his appreciation for me taking time out of my busy schedule to go see him and support him, had given me the juice to go back, to put back into my work. So, not so much a rant this week, but something that I want all of our artists in town to do. Take some time. Make a hole in your calendar. Go out and see some art. Go support a friend. Go see something that is new and different that you might never do before now. Because it will not only give your mind a chance to relax a bit, but it will also regenerate you and get you to the point where you can infuse something new and different back into your own work and into your own life. And that's the weekly rant.
Really? Really? Art has no friends.
What?
Art has no friends. Art has no room for friends. Art has no room for anything else, no room for family. Art is all. Art is all. It is selfish. It is a vampire that sucks the life out of you. You want friends? Start a puppy shelter if you want friends. Art, art.
And are you okay?
I suppose, and improv. Of all things, improv.
Yes.
Does this mean, I guess this means that you're not going to prepare anything anymore for the frickin' show. Great. I just have to.
All right, well, the slamming of the studio door means that our time has come to an end, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned for Rick Moore and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. We want to thank our guests, Deborah McLeod and Keisha Jarrett, for spending some time with us and telling us about their lovely projects at Chroma Projects Art Laboratory and at Live Arts. We will see you guys again next week. Thank you so much for tuning in to Homegrown.